This is the Cullinane and Green Report. Today on Edgewise, we interview Tim Draper. Welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. I'm Roger Green.
And I'm Joe Cullinane.
And remember, we're on the bleeding edge, so you don't have to be. In this segment of Edge Views, we interview legendary venture capitalist Tim Draper of Draper Fisher Jurvetson. Tim has been named to Forbes' Midas list, which ranks the best dealmakers in high-tech and life sciences. His firm has invested in such disruptive and innovative companies as Hotmail, Overture, Interwoven, Baidu, Sugar CRM, and recently Skype, and the person credited with creating viral marketing.
Tim, welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure.
Tim, the focus of our podcast is the impact of technology on business development. We were wondering what technologies you think are going to have the greatest impact over the next 5 years.
Well, I think there are actually a couple of them. One is that Skype has created this new platform for all telecommunications, and I think there are going to be a lot of startups that take advantage of the fact that there's a new platform to develop to. I think that that video is going to be a big opportunity where companies do video on demand or video teleconferencing or whatever. I think those are going to be a bigger and bigger part of our world. And then, you know, we have interests in things like clean technologies and nanotechnology, and we think that they'll have a big impact too.
Well, we're big fans of Skype. In fact, we're recording this using Skype, and I think Roger was a very early adopter of Skype. We think it's a fabulous technology.
I think it's one of the best things that's come down the pike in the past 5 years, to be honest.
Yeah, we've been really happy with how that all worked out. We think it's one of the great new technologies, and the idea that you can now communicate verbally throughout the world for free has done some extraordinary things for the world, where geographic barriers start to crumble because we can now all communicate with one another for free, and it doesn't matter whether we're in Pakistan or Uzbekistan or Panama or California, you'll be able to communicate for free with anybody in the world.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about the globalization, really. Silicon Valley really no longer has a monopoly on innovation, yet most of the venture capital firms still invest in Silicon Valley. Your firm, on the other hand, has a global perspective. How do you invest globally, and what are the challenges and opportunities you face?
Well, when I was getting started in the venture business, all of the venture capitalists said you had to be very local to your entrepreneurs, and that was definitely true. But it turned out that we needed to be local everywhere, because after the advent of Hotmail and combined with search engines like Google and Baidu, it made it so that we all had perfect information and we were able to communicate with each other for free. And that meant that there was no advantage in the information technology space to be in the Silicon Valley. It could, you know, any new breakthrough could happen and it could come from anywhere in the world. And so we decided that it was very important for us to set up an affiliate network, because it was the most efficient way to cover a large territory in a short period of time. And so that affiliate network has allowed us the ability to invest everywhere, but still be local to our entrepreneurs.
What emerging markets do you see as the ones offering the most opportunity for technology and innovation?
So the emerging markets that I believe are the most promising are the Ukraine, where there are some extraordinary new technologies, and they've had a giant political revolution, and there will be an economic revolution, and that will encourage technological entrepreneurs to innovate. And I think that's going to generate a lot of interesting new technologies. I'm also excited about what what is happening in places like Korea, where their cell phone technology is well beyond ours. But beyond that, of course, China and India are going to innovate very quickly, because those are two populations that have been kept down by poor governance for many, many years. And all of a sudden, they have much better governance, and they have the ability to innovate and make a big impact on the world. So, and with a billion people each, they're going to have quite a market to test it on.
I see that recently Infosys has made a big splash about moving up the food chain from being the company that is sort of the factory drill presses, that is to say the programmers executing designs that come from the U.S., to want to take a share and a bite of the market on the design side. And that seems to be something that other companies in India would like to be part of as well. Do you see that as one of the trends that's going to shift where innovation comes from?
Yeah, I believe I actually met with Mr. Murthy while I was over there at Infosys, and they have quite an extraordinary organization. The campus is the most modern campus I've seen anywhere in the world, and the people are all young and invigorated and very driven, and so there will be a lot of innovation that comes out of there. When Infosys sets up new customers, they do the work that's required for those new customers, but as they do it, of course, they their creativity gets sparked, and many, many new innovations will come from there. And I do know that Mr. Murthy has actually started a few spin-outs of Infosys, and they are that kind of thing will start to happen.
You've talked about competition between companies globally, but I've also heard that you've talked about competition between governments. Do you see this new global environment requiring governments to be more competitive?
Yes, governments will have to be more competitive. What's happened is, since there's so much communication around the world, we've all gotten to know each other, very good friends in all parts of the world, so that the geographic barriers have all started to crumble. And so where a government used to say, you know, I'm in control of all I purvey, now a government has to say, how do I encourage people to want to stay here? And how do I encourage the great minds and the capital to be innovating in my country instead of in another country, or in my state instead of another state? Or even in my city as opposed to another city. The governments have to compete. They are now recognizing it. People are much more mobile than they've ever been before. And the communication is such that it's forcing these governments to understand that there might be a better government somewhere else. And it's remarkable that the U.S. government hasn't really woken up nearly as much as you might have hoped, given that some of these other governments are really hot on our tail.
Tim, you've been involved in a number of startups that have really been disruptive, that where the paradigm has shifted, like with Hotmail, for example, and Skype, as you were explaining a moment ago. One of your latest ventures is Social Text, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that and how you find that will be similar in terms of it being a paradigm-shifting application.
We tend to look for companies that can take down sort of lazy bureaucratic industries. So Hotmail took down the post office, and Skype took down the phone companies, and GoTo, you know, changed the entire advertising industry. So we look for things that can make a big impact on society as a whole, and we think that Social Text has that. The idea that you can do a wiki for any kind of a project throughout an organization is changing the way that we think in terms of communicating. It's going to change the way email is done. It's going to make us much more efficient. And it's going to change the way projects are managed. And We think that that has the same kind of potential long term as any of these other big successes.
So it's using wikis as a collaborative tool so that companies can really get deep into an area. Is that one of the advantages?
Yeah, exactly. And how those wikis relate to an email string, or how they relate to a series of projects, they make it much easier for a company to go through the process of developing a product or driving to a new marketing system or even a new finance direction.
We'll have to.
Yeah, so keep your eyes open.
Okay, we'll have to look into that for the Cullinane and Green report. I have a question. The model for liquidity events seems to have changed from IPOs to acquisitions. Is this a healthy thing, and why did this happen, do you think?
Well, that is one of the big nightmares that we have in business now. Sarbanes-Oxley came, and rather than just fixing one company or two companies that seemed to have some problems, they tried to do something that was blanketed to the entire U.S. corporate world. And it has made it so expensive for a public company that these companies that used to be able to go public with $20 million in revenues and growing and things were going very well are now in a position where they have to wait until they're doing $100 million in revenues. So what used to be a 5 to 7 year process is now a 10 to 12 year process, where, and the entrepreneurs are saying, well, gee, I think it's time for me to sell out because this IPO thing isn't going to work for me. So this is one of those situations where the U.S. is not properly competing, where a lot of the entrepreneurs I've talked to who have very successful companies who are going to take them public are going to take them public on the London Exchange or the Singapore Exchange or the Hong Kong Exchange, and not on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, because the restrictions and Sarbanes-Oxley have just made it too difficult. Because if a company is doing $20 million in revenues and they make about $1 million a year in profits, that used to be enough to take a company public. Today, with Sarbanes-Oxley, it takes about $1.5 million just to comply with all the Sarbanes-Oxley laws. And as a result, that company that was profitable and growing is now in a loss position because of Sarbanes-Oxley. So it
Wow.
has been a real disaster.
I've heard over the past few days some conversation about carving out some exceptions to Sarbanes-Oxley for companies like that.
How about one big exception?
Yeah, for all of them. Well, that kind of gets into your idea of governments competing, that if we're not competitive for startups to have some kind of avenue into public markets, they're going to go elsewhere, and it sounds like companies are already doing that.
Yes, we really are not looking at business in the right way. When was the last time you heard a politician say, "I'm going to be the best politician for business"? And when did you hear a bureaucrat say, "I'm going to see how I can improve your business"? That never happens.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that, do you?
It never happens in the U.S. anymore. It used to. But it never happens in the U.S. anymore, and it's happening all over the world. It's happening in Singapore. It's happening in China. It's happening in India. It's happening in Ukraine. But you come back to the United States, and it's not happening. They just keep adding more regulations onto business, and they make it tougher and tougher for people to want to do business here.
Do you think this reflects a sentiment amongst the public today, or is this just something that's a failing in the political arena?
I actually think it's one of those situations where you forget what got you here in the first place. If you are an American, may not understand how America got to be the greatest country in the world. And it's a little bit like the the second generation and inheriting money and not knowing where it came from and why it's there, and they are never as effective with it. And they and so America, instead of being this wonderful culture of opportunity that we had, is starting to become this culture of need, where there are so many exceptions and there are so many special programs for special people that we are now in a position where we may not be competitive because we're creating this culture of need. That's what Russia was. Russia was a culture of need, and it did not work. And so what happens is, in a culture of opportunity, the power is pushed back out to the population, and the population can go do what they need to do. In a culture of need, the power is centralized in government and doled out on a favoritism basis, and that just kills a country. And we've just got to make sure that the U.S. becomes a culture of opportunity again.
Wow. So is there an announcement at Tim Draper for president? Can we announce that here on the podcast?
Boy.
You got my vote.
I don't know if I, you know, I think actually that we have, I have a much larger impact by funding these companies that are forcing governments to compete with one another than I would doing anything political. It's very difficult for a president,
you're probably right,
or a governor to do anything to improve the situation, because they have to get through this large mass, the Congress and the Senate. And on the other hand, a business can just do it, lay it out for the world to see, and force those governments to start to look at themselves and see how they can actually compete with other governments.
Wow, that's a fascinating point. So you can have a bigger impact on the world by financing these great companies that are actually changing the world. Well, really, in a way, I mean, Skype is changing the world, isn't it? The ability to communicate anywhere for free is just amazing.
Yeah, we think that Skype has a far and wide, wonderful opening of the world. It allows people to have that person-to-person communications, where email, you could get the job done. But Skype, you're getting the personal connection in there. And so I think that Skype is really going to have a huge impact on societies all over the world. And it is already. It's really making a huge impact because, you know, we have all these great relationships now with people all over the world, or, you know, if we have all these great relationships in China, it's much more likely that that we'll have a peaceful coexistence with China. And when you hear the people in Washington saying things like, you know, oh, you know, fear of China, worried that they're going to be bigger than we are, all that stuff, you start to think, God, are you guys missing the boat? These are our best friends. What are you thinking? So I get the feeling that this communication is going to encourage peace all the way around the world, and it's going to allow us to second guess bad governance.
Do the Chinese government officials feel the same way about Skype, or do they see it as a threat? I know that certainly with some of the search engine issues recently, that's been one of the news items, but I haven't heard Skype ever mentioned in that context.
I don't know. I think that the that all of the governments will have one of two feelings. I mean, each individual within the government will have one of two feelings. Either they are flexible to change and they say, oh, this is interesting. Now we can have much better relations with all of these different countries because we have Skype and there's this free communication. And then there are the Luddites who are afraid of any kind of change. And they might say, gee, we can't have that happening because we lose control or we lose our power,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But I think most forward-looking governments, and I would say China is a forward-looking government, are going to recognize that things like Skype are only for the good of the planet.
Tim, I want to switch gears a little bit. I know that you're heavily involved in something called BizWorld. It's something that you started and I think is a really neat organization. You want to tell us a little bit about BizWorld?
Yeah, BizWorld is terrific. My daughter came to me and she said, "Daddy, what do you do?" And she was about 9 years old. And she said, "Well, so what do you do all day?" And I thought, gee, I could either tell her or I could just show her. And she loved to make those friendship bracelets. So I created a course, went into her classroom, and it had a design day, a manufacturing day, a market day, and a finance day. And it was terrific from the very beginning. The design day, they had to figure out how to get their money. They did a theoretical design on paper, and then they did a prototype. And then manufacturing day, they had to figure out whose prototype they were going to manufacture, and there's this group dynamic that went on there. And then market day, we invited in another class and gave them each 10 kid bucks, and then they turned it into a big Turkish bazaar. And market day, they did their own logo and slogan and sales pitch and commercial. And then finance day, we made them keep track of their money all the way along, and I had them drag and drop the numbers into what became a balance sheet and an income statement, and then we valued the companies at the end. And we did it all with very simple numbers, and so that a third grade class could do it. And it was terrific. The teachers wanted it back, and the principal wanted me to teach all our classes. And then what I did was I set up the BizWorld Foundation, you know, at bizworld.org, where it has now taken on a life of its own, and we're in all 50 states, and we're in about 17 countries. And
wow.
And actually, even in North Carolina, I believe it's standard to the fifth grade textbook. So, yeah, so we really have...
Really?
We've really made big impact.
That's very impressive.
And there's a wonderful woman running the program, and I've been really happy with how it's grown.
Sounds like if you're really successful, you should get the politicians involved. To your earlier comment,
teach it in Washington,
right? Go over at the Congress.
One of the reasons that I set up BizWorld was to make sure that people understood business, and that wasn't just young children. I thought if the
right.
young children, I actually make the children in BizWorld, I make the children go back and tell their parents what they're doing, and if they come back with this sheet signed, they get an extra kid buck for the game.
Oh, really?
And
have you had any real companies emerge, any IPOs yet from BizWorld?
we're getting close, because my daughter's about 11 years older than she was then, and some of her friends are very entrepreneurial. So we're,
great.
Stay tuned. We might see one or two big successes.
So that's sort of the farm team for your organization. Now you're starting them out young.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship can start
that's
anytime.
Right.
Well, Tim, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, and this has been just great, and I'm sure everybody's going to really enjoy hearing this. And thanks for being so gracious. We really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, and I'm happy to do it, and I hope this podcast starts to spread to the world.
Thanks very much.
Great.
Thanks for listening to the Cullinan and Green Report. We hope you'll join us again next time. In the meantime, remember, we're on the bleeding edge, so you don't have to be.